And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Like many of us, Holly Ojalvo's career path hasn't been linear. She's had many twists and turns. As another guest on the show once put it, her path was and remains squiggly, and I just love that word. In spite of that, she's been an editor at many leading media outlets, including the New York Times, USA Today, and a bunch more. But did you notice my word choice just now? I said, in spite of, and you probably didn't blink an eye. Neither would I have. And that highlights a problem. The problem that first connected me to Holly. There's an expectation that career paths should be linear and singular. But the reality is, for many of us, that's just simply not the case. Our work takes us to many different places. And I believe that those places can all add up to something, and that's where the real magic happens. Holly and I discussed normalizing the non-linear path and the many facets of her work, making transitions, and just so much more. She was just a blast to talk with, and I think you are going to enjoy this conversation. This, of course, is the Meaning Movement Podcast, a show about work worth doing. I'm your host, Dan Cumberland, today with guest Holly Ojalvo. Stay with us. Can you imagine waking up on Monday mornings excited about your day? Can you imagine loving being asked the question, "So, what do you do?" I created the Calling Course with a single goal in mind, to create a resource for finding what's next. The Calling Course is based on the process I developed through working with people around the big career transitions that we all go through. I went so far as to get a master's degree in psychology and culture to bring this concept to life, and I'd like to invite you to consider joining us. If you've ever felt stuck, if you've ever felt uncertain of what's next, if you've ever felt like you want more from your work, but you're not sure how to get it, I made this for you. Join us. Get started for free today with a mini course called 5 Clues to Your Calling at thecallingcourse.com. I'll see you there. Holly, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to the Meaning Movement Podcast.
Thank you so much, Dan. I'm really excited for this.
The place I always like to begin is the question, how do you begin to talk about your work in the world?
Well, that is a great question, because that's something I've thought about a lot, is even how you even begin to talk about your work in the world, especially when your path has not been linear and when you're a career switcher like me. So even figuring out how to frame your story in a way that makes sense for other people is hard. So I'll try it out on you, and you tell me how I'm doing and trying to frame
Perfect.
It up. How about that? Sort of like a meta process, right?
Yeah, let's just workshop it.
Exactly. Let's workshop it. We're all in progress, right? We're all a story.
Yes.
So I guess for me, I've spent most of the last dozen years or so in newsrooms, you know, as a newsroom leader and an editor, mostly focused on things like content strategy and execution. I've run teams and verticals. I've also been in more of, support roles. So I've run hiring, you know, mentorship, coaching, internship programs, professional development, those sorts of things. And before that, I was a high school teacher. I taught English and journalism and philosophy at several top public and private schools. Mm. And so you know, I've had two different careers, right? In yeah. education and in journalism. And there are some elements that overlap and there are some that don't. And I guess I'm always sort of thinking about how to combine those two things in sort of different and fresh ways. Cause I'm just really passionate about both of those areas. And in general about empowering people to, you know, be their best selves, do their best work and tell great stories. And that's how I think about my career.
I love it. Can you, that last phrase, can you say that last phrase again? Cause it's, I feel like that's like a mission statement, like do your best work.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a phrase or a tagline that you've workshopped, but I thought that was like so clear and concise. Oh, wow. I was like, that really encapsulates a lot of your work.
That's amazing to hear. Yeah. It's not like a tagline that I like say, I just said it just now. So, yeah. You know, maybe good thing we're recording this and this for podcast. Yes. So maybe I'll have to go back and turn that into my mantra, but no, it's funny. Like, I guess I'm the kind of person who I don't like to be the face of things, right? I'd rather not be, you know, if I were working in TV, for example, I wouldn't want to be the anchor. I'd want to be the producer. You know, if I were working in politics, I wouldn't want to be, you know, the candidate or the politician. Yeah. I would want to be running the campaign or running the show. So I like to be behind the scenes. I like to empower other people to do their best work and to thrive. So far I've done that mostly in education and journalism, and I could stay in journalism. I could go back to education, or I could combine those things in a different way. But I guess the threads of that, right, the theme of that is really setting up other people to succeed and thrive. That's where
I love it.
I know I'm happy.
I love it. So just to rewind to, you know, back as a young woman thinking about the career path ahead of you, like what did that look like? If we could just, you know, turn back time, were you planning to go into education and just be a high school teacher or something along those lines, you know, long term, and then this kind of switch happened? Or what did that path, I guess, at that point in your life, where did you think you were headed?
So depending on how far we're rewinding, we could go back to the point when I wanted to be president of the United States.
Yes.
I had a t-shirt that said Holly for president on it that we had made up
for
me. I
love that.
It was pink with green iron-on letters. And I wore it around. Like, I wore it to school. I like wore this shirt. I wanted everybody to know that I was going to grow up to be president of the United States. And that obviously has not happened yet.
Not yet.
We still have time. Yeah, I mean, I was very, just to say all that to say, I was a very ambitious, driven kid. And I just thought the whole world was open to me. And I guess, you know, originally I thought more concretely, you know, when I was in college, I really thought I was going to be a college professor. You know, my professors pulled me aside and said, you know, we really think you could be really good at this, like what we do here. And I was like, no way, really cool. So I went to graduate school initially in a graduate program in my field, which was English literature. And I thought with the aim of getting a PhD and becoming a professor. And I was in the program and realized I was miserable and I didn't want this to be my life. And so I left the program with an MA, which they call a terminal MA when you leave a PhD program, is if you have a disease. And you know, you're like persona non grata, like goodbye, get out of here. and you know, when you leave a program like that, I feel like you either know what you want to do instead or you don't. Yep. And I did not. So I left that program and wandered, you know, in the desert for a while thinking, okay, I don't really know what I want to do next. And I had a couple writing and editing kind of jobs because that's, you know, sort of my skill set with language. Mm-hmm. And then realized, you know what, I really do love the teaching piece. What if I go back to that, but I don't become a college professor? What if I do that at the high school level? So I went back and got a second master's in education and I became a high school teacher.
Love it. Love it. And then without dating yourself too much, I guess. How long were you in that role before making the switch to journalism?
Yeah. So I was a high school teacher for about 10 years. And I guess when I first started teaching, I was already, you know, because I had the two master's degrees and because I had a couple jobs, you know, I was like 29 or 30, I think, when I became a teacher. Mm-hmm. So I did that for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. before I decided to switch careers. And even that came about very organically. It wasn't really a hard stop. I had been freelancing for the New York Times on the side. So I was a full-time teacher and I was advising, a student publication, which is also a lot of extra time. And then on the side, in addition to that, 5 days a week, I was doing some freelance work for the New York Times. And then it organically turned into like an in-house job, which is not a typical path at all. That's not usually how people start in journalism or start at the New York Times. Just be honest, a really weird way to sort of luck into a job. And that happens sometimes in your career. You know, things just kind of morph into something else. I mean, even the way I came to the Times in the first place was I applied cold. Because I use the Times a lot in the classroom, and they have this thing called the Learning Network that still exists. And it's all about, the whole purpose of the Learning Network is to help teachers use the Times in the classroom. And I was like, hey, I'm a teacher who uses the Times in the classroom. So, and I emailed the person who was then the editor and said, oh, hi, you know, I use the Times in all my classes. I use Times articles in philosophy. I use it as models for my journalism students, obviously. I use, you know, essays, you know, as models for my composition students. I use essays, you know, articles to supplement my literature. You know, I use it all the time and everything. Can I give you my lesson plans? And she actually wrote back to me and was like, that's not the way it works. You know, we don't just take lessons, people use it. Thanks. But actually we don't do that. But and she said, you know, funny, you know, you should reach out to me at this point. I don't actually need another writer, but I actually need like a deputy editor. Is that something you'd be interested in? And yes, I was very interested. So some of it was just timing and maybe just the way I approached her. I don't know. But then I just became her deputy and I did editing for her, you know, 5 days a week. And then I ended up going in-house and being the deputy to her replacement in an expanded role. And you know, just kind of went from there. So yeah, some of it's luck, some of it's timing, some of it's, you know, what I was doing. It's sort of a combination of all that stuff.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it underscores, you know, I think a theme on this show, and I think with a narrative that I'm often trying to, I think, help us all move beyond is that career paths are linear. And that's, you know, one of the things that first connected us. You had a tweet that I came across. I think it seemed like a lot of people came across that tweet about a non-linear career path. And it just struck a chord with me, as with many people. I think that we're all, culturally indoctrinated into thinking that like you're on the straight path through your education into the workforce, and then you know that you stay on that path till you retire or stop working for some reason. And that's so rarely the case, and often there's transitions that you could never expect, many of which are even better than we could imagine, but they just happen. They happen in ways like this happened for you. An email, a random email turned into a new career. Like that's incredible. Yes. I love
it. That's a really interesting way of thinking about it. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but that's absolutely right. And, you know, I think one of the reasons why that tweet, which by the way, I still to this day, I'm shocked that, you know, more than six people responded to that tweet. And, you know, I'm looking at it right now. It's up to 156,000 likes,
crazy.
Over 21,000 retweets, you know, almost 700, you know, just direct messages back to me, you know, comments back
Unreal.
To me, you know, replies. It's wild to me, but I think the reason I've thought about it a lot, I think the reason is that is exactly what you're saying. It's common, extremely common, but still for whatever reasons, not normalized. Like we have sort of this idea that's ingrained in us for, I don't even know why, that we should have this trajectory. You should be on this one path. Like you pick, you hear students talk about this now. It's like, what am I going to do with my life?
Yeah.
Like that's just not the way it works for most people. I mean, even in a field like education, right? I was tenured at, you know, a leading high school that is a great place to work. And I loved it. And I could have spent my entire career there. I mean, I remember being there thinking like, okay, the head of my department was only a little bit older than me. I remember thinking when he moved into that job, like he might be my boss for the rest of my life, right? Like we might literally work here till we retire. And so many people do that, which is great if that's what makes them happy and brings them joy. And I I'm not a person who likes to stay still. I always want to do like something new or something different. And that's been a blessing and a curse, you know?
Yeah.
So some people might look at my career and go, you left that teaching job at Stuyvesant High School? Who would do that? And then people will go, you left the New York Times? Like, what's the matter with you? You know, there are people who would just think I'm really stupid, and maybe I am in some ways. And then in other ways, it's exactly what you're saying, that, you know, we don't really necessarily want to stay still. We want to have different kinds of experiences in life. Some of us are just built that way, and we're on a nonlinear path.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, so much resonates with me. But I think part of it is like the transitions, the career transition, like looking at your resume, these great places that you've been, a lot of people are like scared of having too many transitions on their resume. And I'm curious how you think about those transitions and the story that they tell. And how do you, to someone who's listening, like, I'm in a job and I want to make a change, but I'm scared of having too many changes because then I might not be hireable. In your own experience, as you know, from the jobs you've had, the transitions you've made, as well as, you know, being in hiring, since you've hired journalists and such. How do you think about transitions on resumes?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think, and especially right now, like with the pandemic and how many people have lost jobs, right? It's really very pressing, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it used to be, you know, a real mark of shame. And there's like, you know, if you Google, there's so many articles about how to explain a career gap or a career switch, and, you know, how to downplay, you know, the rough parts of that and stuff like that. And, you know, and last summer I wrote an article for the New York Times about how to deal with, you know, a layoff in a way that helps you not feel ashamed about it. Because I think there's a lot of shame associated with career transitions and career switches, especially if those transitions are not, as you were saying, if they're not linear or they're not on this upward trajectory. Sometimes, you know, you take an off ramp, and sometimes you leave a place not of your own accord because you got laid off or because place closed, or, you know, there's like so many reasons. So I think, and it goes back to like to the whole like common versus normalized thing. It is really common to switch jobs, but we still have this idea that like you're going to be somewhere for the rest of your career and you're going to have a retirement party and get a gold watch, you know, like it's just like, because we think that's like what we're, but the good news, I think, inside of that is that it is becoming so much more common to transition either jobs, industries, or both.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, like I've definitely talked to, as a hirer, as you say, and I've hired many journalists, and I've read thousands of resumes and cover letters, and I've interviewed probably thousands of people, and I've hired a lot of people. I definitely have noticed a change in those conversations, you know, where people don't necessarily feel as bad as they used to feel, you know, over the years. Like you can tell that things are starting to move and change, but there is still some shame associated with that. And you can tell when people start to feel a little anxious in the interview, like, okay, here comes the part where she's going to grill me about why I only stayed at that place for, you know, a year. You know, you can see people kind of bracing themselves, right? Or like going into their little explanation that they're like, okay, they've prepped it. Like they've prepared, they have the reason why, you know? Yep. And I've sometimes tried to, you know, put people at ease in those conversations and just say like, I don't actually look at that negatively. I think it's super interesting that you used to be, you know, a working scientist and now you want to be a science journalist. I think you bring a lot to the table. Whenever I've said things like that, people almost every time feel very surprised. Like, wait, really? You think that's a good thing? Wait, really? Yeah. You think that's not a bad thing? You think that could be a plus? Like, oh, they feel surprised. They feel relieved. They feel comforted by the fact that you might think of that as a plus, that they've had the fortitude to switch something, that they've, you know, put themselves out there, that they have had to learn something totally new, that, you know, there's so many ways to think of that as a plus, but we've been conditioned to think of it as a negative. Like, oh, you switched, you move around, you don't commit. So I think there's a lot of ways to reframe it that I think can be very, very powerful.
I love that. And I think as I was thinking about this conversation, think about this specific piece of how do we tell the stories around transitions, particularly for, you know, as you're in a job interview. What I think is really exciting that's happening is how much people are resonating with this idea that, you know, that career paths are not linear for most people. And like to go into those conversations, at least like giving yourself at least the hope that the person on the other end of the conversation, the person that's doing the hiring, doing the interview, has had a taste of that.
Yes.
Like, to break it down, like, they're not a robot, they're human, right?
Yes.
And that I feel like the transitions say something about being human, that we are all in process, that we change and grow, and that it speaks to, you know, our desires to, you know, take on the next challenge and grow in, you know, our skills and experience.
Mm.
So I don't know. I don't know if that resonates with you at all, but
definitely.
I was really thinking about, like, that's an exciting thing that's happening, that, you know, so many people have liked your tweet. Some of those people are hiring people, and those
yes.
people, like, can look at those transitions differently than we look at them when they're on our own resumes, if that makes sense.
That's right. No, it absolutely makes so much sense. And then, you know, another way I think about it too is about risk, right? Like, people are taking risks in their lives and their careers. I mean, I took a huge risk leaving a tenured job, which, you know, people think of as cushy or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I took a huge risk in leaving the New York Times to launch my own startup and be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I mean, I took these ridiculous risks, and other people take even bigger risks. And, you know, companies, they need some people who are steady and they're going to stay there for a long time. And they also need some people who are going to be, have a little bit of appetite for risk, you know, for innovation. And, you know, how are you going to ever have new ideas and think differently if all you ever have are people who have never left the company? I mean, it's hard to inject that energy, right? You kind of need both. Some people bloom where they're planted and grow towards the light. And some people need to be replanted. I don't actually garden, but maybe this metaphor works in some way. You know, I just feel like there's, I think you kind of need a little bit of both. And, you know, I mean, I've heard from people over and over, like, oh, when people are hiring you, a company's hiring you, all they want is someone who's done that exact job, you know, for years. Mm. And I do think, you know, that is safer. There's less risk there if you know that person has done this exact job and they've been good at it. You know, I think that your job, if you are a career switcher, transitioner, or, you know, however you want to think about it, is to frame your experience in a way that is a positive, that is a plus. Like, I'm going to bring fresh energy. I'm going to inject, you know, new perspective and new ideas. And I bring something different to the table. And this is how it's going to be really valuable. You know, if a place is not open to hearing that, maybe they're just not ready for it. But there are places that are, for sure.
Yeah, I love that. I know that on that tweet thread, you linked to a bunch of great resources, a few books that I've read, some that I haven't that I want to, but one that you linked to was Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World, which is a fantastic book that I recommend, just about that very idea that so often the innovation, the growth, the next phase of whatever it is that needs to be brought about comes from outside of the, you know, the specialized world that cultures that businesses live in, which I think is, you know, for anyone listening who's interested in this idea, that's a great book that explores that in great detail.
Yeah, I need to read that book myself. I mean, that's another way to think about it, right? It's not just like the steady people and the risk takers. It's also the specialists and the generalists. I think a lot of industries and a lot of organizations need both of those too, right? Like I'm a generalist. I often work with specialists, you know, in newsrooms. Yep. Or what have you, but I have a lot of soft skills. I have a lot of transferable skills. So in some ways that makes career pathing really challenging and daunting. It's like, I've got this set of skills. And, you know, sometimes I've thought about it as like, I have these pieces to a puzzle and I don't know what the puzzle looks like. And the pieces can be combined in different ways. Like, I don't know how to assemble it this time. You know, like I've definitely thought about myself that way. And but so it can be daunting, but it could also be positive. Like, wow, I'm so flexible and I can do different things. Like, I've had people who are specialists say to me, wow, you're so lucky. You could do 12 different jobs or more. Like, there's so many different ways to combine your pieces. Or like, well, what I am is this. Like, I have a friend who's like, I do sales. And he's like, when I look at your career and I think about the jobs you're interviewing for, wow, look at the variety of things that you're, conversations that you're having and jobs that you're, he's like, if I'm going to do a job, it's going to be in sales. Like, that's what I'm good at. Yeah. That's what I do. And I kind of think it takes all types. I think you need people who are specialists who really know what they're doing and they can go deep. And I think, hopefully I'm not just telling myself this, you know, I do think there's something to be said for the value that generalists bring too.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah. Well, I think back to that question of you know, that students ask, so of what am I going to do with my life? And, I know you mentioned it earlier in this conversation. One of the, I guess, real negative effects of the linear narrative is how much more pressure is on that question to get it right And I know from my own life, you know, another reason why I host this podcast, or another reason why I have these conversations, because my path has been so not linear. I was a youth pastor, a photographer. I'm an entrepreneur now, doing things that I never would have even imagined myself doing, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. But I felt so stuck for so, so long, because I didn't know how to answer that question of, what am I going to do with my life? And a better question, you know, I think would be, you know, where do I start? What do I want to do?
Yes. Yes.
Next. And I don't know how different work would feel if that was the starting place, instead of like one final answer that you get stamped on your forehead for the rest of your life or something.
Yes. Yes. It's funny because we tell young people, you know, follow your passion. And then I've seen other advice, like, that's the wrong way to think about it. Don't think about it as a passion. Think about like what you're good at and where you can add value. Okay. Think about that.
Yeah.
Or you think about, you know, obviously, you know, your major, right? Like you have to use that the rest of your life. Or, you know, there's just all kinds of different like ways to frame that up. Yeah. And I think I'm always thinking about the way I always talk about it. I don't even know how I got into using this phrase, is, you know, I'm looking for my next adventure. I'm thinking about what
I love that.
Or I've thought about as my next chapter. If you think about like a book,
yeah,
a novel, like an epic, something really long, where lots of different things happen. You know, thinking about what am I going to do for the next chapter? I don't think about the rest of my life anymore. I know not to think about it that way.
Yeah.
If it happens to be for the rest of my life, it'll happen that way, but I'm not going to think about it that way. You know, I'm going to think about what's going to come next and how I am going to leverage all my experience in the past. But, you know, the stuckness that you're describing, I've definitely felt that. I don't want to like pretend like it's all great and I'm just transitioning my way through in this like fluid way and it's all jolly and amazing and so special, you know, and it's an adventure. I mean, adventures have scary parts and they have bad parts, and bad stuff happens when you're on an adventure sometimes. And I've definitely experienced that myself. And I think, you know, when we're talking about normalizing the nonlinear career path, I think you need to normalize that too. Like sometimes you're going to feel stuck. And, you know, I think we, as a culture, we tend to prize that the narrative of like the person who just like picks themselves up and dusts themselves off and just goes forward and they just figure out what to do next, like in a minute. And they just, I think we, there's like a lot of stories about that. I've seen stories. I'm sure you have too, during the pandemic. Like this person lost their job. And like 5 minutes later, they launched this new business and they're making it work. And people are like, yay, that person's amazing. And the people who were stuck or who get stuck for however long and really feel paralyzed or frozen or whatever, you know, metaphor you want to use, like that's not something that we celebrate. We don't celebrate, you know, going deep and being introspective and having conversations with people and trying to figure it out. That's not the part that feels cool. That's not the part that you get profiled for, you know?
No.
So I feel like that's more invisible. And then I think people feel, you know, ashamed of it. They don't want to be open about the fact that they're stuck because that feels like it reflects on you.
Yeah.
And I've definitely, I mean, I lost my job last May, which I wrote about, you know, for the New York Times. And I've definitely had phases in the past, you know, 11 months where I felt very stuck, very frozen, you know, because you're saying like, well, what do I like to do? Well, you know what? When you're a generalist, you like to do a lot of things. What am I good at doing?
Totally.
As a generalist, I'm good at doing a lot of things. So, you know, like I tried different things on for size and I'm like, well, they all feel kind of equally interesting to me. Like, do I stay in journalism? I love journalism. Cool. Do I go back to education? Love education. Maybe I do that. Or maybe I combine these pieces in a different new way. Well, I could do that too. And so like listening to what you really want and really are best at and what you're really good at is not always clear when you're this kind of person. So yeah, it can be the downside is that can be really, really challenging. No doubt.
Yeah. 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 And while you're in that, you know, liminal in between space, it's, you know, there's pressures, especially, you know, when you have bills to pay, mouths to feed, like it just adds a whole nother layer of complexity and struggle and even pain, I would say, for people, depending on your situation. I think is what you're saying is really, really important. We don't want to gloss over how hard those transitions can be, and they are, you know, we don't want to enter into them lightly.
That's so, right. I mean, people have different kinds of bandwidth for entering into them, and or they're forced into them, or both, right? Yeah. So, but I think, you know, being really intentional, making sure that you have your, you know, support network around you, people who are good sounding boards where you can bounce ideas around. I mean, there are, there are a lot of resources out there, right? Finding the right thing that really resonates with you and helps you if you need help with your journey, and with how to think about, you know, your next chapter.
Yeah.
You know, there is stuff out there. You know, I'm actually in a, in a program right now that is designed to help people kind of move forward in that process. So, you know, there are things like that out there, and it's been a really interesting process for me to be part of that kind of program.
Yeah. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about that and, you know, what some of your takeaways have been.
Yeah. So, so the program that I'm in is called Evolve Me. And it was started by two women who also, you know, had inflection points in their own careers for different reasons. You know, one left the workforce to raise a family for a while. And then after, you know, 10 or 12 years was, you know, looking to return and not sure, you know, how to do that. And the other one, the other founder, was in, you know, a career that she found was very closely aligned with her identity for a long time. And then decided, you know, she really didn't any longer feel really like it was aligned with her identity, and then therefore what now? And so the whole program is designed for women, specifically mid-career women who are at an inflection point for whatever reason. Maybe they're returning to the workforce after taking care of family, or for some other reason, maybe they've been laid off. Maybe they're just thinking about making a career switch, or for whatever reason, they're looking to pivot or do something new. So they created this whole method to go through. And there's a curriculum. The thing I'm in is like an eight week curriculum. There's, you know, it starts with the discovery phase. You discover, you know, what your like superpowers are, what direction you kind of want to go in. The whole thing is called the DARE method. D-A-R-E is an acronym. So the first part is discover, D. Second part is called amplify. You, you know, you craft your pitch, you amplify your strengths, you try to get over any kind of imposter syndrome you might be experiencing, you try to think about like your personal brand. The third part is called refresh, and you like refresh your resume, you refresh your LinkedIn, all your personal branding. And the last part is embark, because after you've done all that, you're ready to kind of move to the, you know, out into the world. You're building your network, you're thinking about how to have conversations and interviews in effective ways, as we're talking about, you know, how to frame your experience in your past and how to leverage all that for the future. And as part of that, you're in like a, what's called an accountability, you know, group. So you're in like a subgroup of women in the program, and you meet separately once a week as a small group. And that's been incredibly powerful and amazing. I'm in a group of five, just incredible women in completely different industries. And we're all in, you know, experiencing some different version
together
of this. That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. We're in this little boat together. And it's just been, the conversations we've had have been very rich, very supportive. You know, that's like a new sounding board that I have separately from my other ones. And so it's been very powerful. And the whole idea of that process is that it's not linear, again, with that whole nonlinear career pathing thing. Even that process is not linear. It's framed as, you know, as a like a virtuous, you know, cycle. So you can cycle through it. So some of us feel like we're at the end of it, and we're not really done. And they're reminding us, you know what, go back to the beginning, go back to the discover part. Maybe since you've been through this whole pipeline, going back to it, you're going to see it differently. It's going to hit differently. So, you know, it's an iterative process. So yeah, you could, you know, anyone can, you know, join that process and try to do it, or you can just kind of do pieces on your own, but it is powerful to go through it with other people. Definitely.
Yeah.
You feel less alone.
Yeah. I love that, just that iterative approach.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think when it comes to these big questions of work, identity, meaning, you use the word calling, whatever words you want to use, you know, to describe that, like that we're continually growing and changing different parts of ourselves are bubbling up to the surface, and that we have to continually come back to these questions of who am I when it comes to work? Who do I want to be? And what do I want to give voice to
in
the work that I do? And so it has to be an iterative cycle, even if our path on paper is very linear. For those, you know, for the minority of people who stay in one job for a really long time, even within that job, if they're really performing at a high level, they've had to find a way to grow within the boundary of that role and make space for all of the change that's happening inside of them. And so I guess all of this is just to say, like, I think the cycle piece is so important that we have keep circling back to who we are and who are we becoming.
I think that's absolutely the
two big questions.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, the discovering piece is at the beginning, but you're also discovering along the way. So the fact that it is iterative makes sense. It's just organically happening anyway.
Yeah.
Because you're having these conversations, you're doing all this work, there's all this homework involved. There's like, there's experts involved. Yeah. It's a very rich program. And you do make discoveries along the way. So you're naturally sort of iterating. You're naturally sort of, it's sort of recursive and building on itself. That's happening anyway, even as you're moving through it. And then we're encouraged to keep going back through it. So that's really helpful. And then, there's a lot of readings, there's videos. And then I've been doing other reading on my own. So you mentioned Range. You know, so one book I'm reading now is called Impact. It's by the founders of a nonprofit called She's the First. Kristen Grant and Tammy Tibbetts. And so they founded a nonprofit that's, you know, that with the goal of helping girls become educated, especially girls who don't have access to education. And then, you know, they wrote this book that I'm reading. It's really powerful. And the subtitle of the book is A Step-by-Step Plan to Create the World You Want to Live In. And it really is about, you know, where can you add value? Where can you, you know, draw on your powers to think about where you can have impact. That's another way of thinking about your career. There's all these different ways of sort of framing the process of thinking about your career. So thinking about where and how you can have impact is a really interesting way. So instead of thinking about like what job should I have, right? Or what career should I have? It's, you know, about like, you know, what kind of impact should I have? And then like, you know, I had a really powerful conversation with a friend recently who was like, no, the way to think about it is what do you love to do? Like think about what you really love. And figure out, like, just start doing that and it will lead you to something else. So there's like all these different like starting points, right? You can think about what you're good at, think about the impact you want to have, think about what you love, you know, think about the service you can provide, whatever it is. Like there's different ways of framing it. But for me, like maybe one way is not the right way. Maybe it's all those ways. Maybe you do need to think about all those things to connect the dots and put it together.
I love it. I love that. I'm curious for you, and this is kind of circling back maybe even to where we started this conversation, but
speaking of iterative,
we're
recursive.
Exactly. We're just cycling. Yeah. Well, just zooming out the big picture and like words like calling and purpose. Mm. And like, I'm curious how you think about those words in your life, in your career, in your journey.
Yes. So it's interesting because I think there are some roles or some careers that are more aligned with the idea of a calling, right? Mm-hmm. I think education for me, and I think for a lot of educators, is one of them. When I was a full-time high school teacher, I felt like it was a calling. I was called to help teenagers learn and grow, right? It definitely felt that way. For many journalists, I think it feels that way. You know, you want to uphold the First Amendment. You want to shed light on the dark places. You want to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable is like one of the ways that journalism is described. You know, you want to expose, you know, malfeasance, or it feels like a calling. So it's interesting. I happen to have two careers that really do, I think for a lot of people who are in them, feel like a calling.
Yeah.
And I think it speaks to like the real sense of purpose and mission. So, you know, I think I'm definitely like a purpose-driven person, a mission-driven person. Like even when I had my startup, it felt very mission-driven. I had a mission. So, you know, not everyone feels that way. For some people, work is more transactional. Yeah. Like they want to do the thing and make a living, and they have a really rich life outside of it. And that's really where they get their energy, and that's what feeds them and nourishes them. And that's great too, right? I don't think there's one way to feel. I don't think everyone needs to feel like their work is their mission or their purpose. But I think if you are someone who, you know, for whom that resonates, that you want to do something that feels like a calling or what have you, I feel like that can either manifest as one thing, right? So you are a journalist, you're an educator, you're a clergy member, you're, you know, like you were saying before, that it's something you used to do. You might want to do something that really does feel more like a calling. But I think sometimes a calling can feel finite. You know, to go back to what you were saying before about even like your own path. Mm-hmm. And it can feel sort of like, wait, I have this calling, but yet I want to leave it. I'm also called to leave, called to do something different. Like, what does that mean? You know, that can feel like a crisis, I think, sometimes.
And, yes.
Right?
Like,
what does it mean that I want to leave the thing? Me too. What did it mean that I want to leave the classroom? And, you know, me leave the classroom? You know, like, so, you know, I think that can be really complicated for people because I think maybe people wonder, like, wait, was this authentic for me? One thing I think about a lot is imposter syndrome. And I think that can come up too. Like, was I faking it all along? And this wasn't really my calling.
Yeah.
Or like you were saying before, when you grow into a role, sometimes when you're not quite 100% ready for a role, you feel like an imposter, but maybe you just need to grow into it. You know, there's like lots of reasons I think people feel like a fraud in their roles. But I think, I do think a calling can be a plus and it can also be really complicated for these reasons. Yeah. It sounds like you experienced that yourself. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think especially in faith, you know, the faith context of that word calling, when it has a capital C on it, it just has this whole additional layer of complexity because it's from God, you know, like, oh my,
calling
like,
you know, to this. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And we could go down all the theological, you know, rabbit hole there. But I think what's been really helpful for me as, you know, in my own work and really as I work with people around these ideas is to think of calling as something very distinct and separate from a job that has more to do with identity. And you already used the word impact. I think that's a really important word. I think it's helpful to think about it. Like, what is the change that you want to be a part of making in the world? That can have a few different, you know, a few different manifestations. But what happens is there's typically some sort of themes that connect it all, which I see very much in your work journey. And the job itself is not the calling. It's an avenue of expression, an opportunity to activate, to flex that muscle, I guess you could say.
Yes.
And I think that that's a much healthier way to think about those words. Does that resonate?
Oh my gosh, so strongly. I mean, I'm thinking about even at the beginning when you said, like, how do you describe your career? And I said that line that you were like, whoa, that sounds like a mantra. Like, because if I'm called to help people, you know, thrive and be, you know, do their best work, that can be expressed in lots of different ways. I can do that inside of journalism and help empower journalists to do incredible, important work. Or I can do that as a teacher and help students, you know, grow and become, you know, the person that you know, and self-actualize, right? Help them on the path to learning and having the skills and the knowledge they need to move on the path. Or I could do it in X, Y, Z other ways, right? Like, if it's really about the purpose and the impact you want to have and not about the job, I'm still called to do those things, but I'm just going to do them in different ways and in different industries.
Exactly.
And it's more like a theme.
Yeah. Yeah. And it feels more invitational instead of instead of like final and finite. Like, it's like, to me, at least it feels freeing and liberating and less like, here's the cage that, you know, some outside force put you in. And instead, like, here's an invitation to go on an adventure and find more beautiful ways to exercise this thing in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. It has the adventure piece. No, it's
that's
right. It has
I'm
a creative
just
piece
romantic
too.
And poetic, you know.
I love that because it's such a different. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you know, when you think about like your life story, your life journey, you know, you think about the way we tell stories or like the hero's journey, right? It kind of is part of that, and you know, part of the hero's journey is like resisting the call. So sometimes maybe you resist, you know, being fit into that box, and it does feel more creative. It does feel more risk oriented. It does feel like more varied, but there's still like a theme. There's something that, you know, where you have this, you have this purpose or you have this, this aspiration. I mean, I guess that's another way to think of as a calling, right? Think of a calling as an aspiration. You're aspiring to do something, but that's separate from the job or the title or the industry, right? That can be true for you in lots of different ways. It can show up in lots of different ways, and you can add value in lots of different ways and places with different kinds of people. And that's what's going to add like a lot of variety to your life too. If you're the kind of person who wants to make those kinds of moves, I think there is a poetry and a beauty to it.
I love that. I love that. We've talked about kind of these inflection point and the decision to take the leap, I guess. And I'm curious, you know, for people, because a lot of people are on the cusp of something who are listening here or wanting that in their work. And I'm curious for you in your journey, the transitions that you've chosen, because not all of them, you know, were necessarily chosen, but the ones that you have, you know, made that decision to transition, you know, whether it be from a teacher to, you know, going full time with journalism or whichever ones, I'm curious how you think about, when is it time for you to make that transition?
Yeah.
What are some of the signs, I guess, that you say, okay, there's more for me on the other side of this, and it's time for me to leave what I'm doing now and pursue this other thing?
Yeah. So when you say that, two specific transitions in my transition filled life come to mind. Well, I guess one I talked about before already, actually the three of them. So one I talked about before was when I was in graduate school and I was just like, I'm really not happy doing this. This thing I loved as an undergraduate, I no longer love. And also the career prospects look bad. Just everything here looks bad. Like there's no good story for me here. And it was a crisis, actually. I mean, I actually really felt like I was going to let my professors down, and I reached out to them and very apologetically. Mm-hmm. And that was really hard because I thought they were going to be really disappointed. And they actually came back and said, no, we'd be disappointed if you did something you really didn't want to do. So, you know, so there's that. I mean, if you just are really miserable, I guess that's one. You have to know yourself and you have to listen to yourself. If you're just like, I thought I would like this, but I don't. And just to be honest with yourself about that, that's one thing that can really, you know, kick you into a transition. Then the other two I'm thinking about. So leaving teaching, like you said, you know, that was big. And, you know, I had started to really feel a little bit burned out as a teacher. And I did not want to be that burned out teacher that I think we've all had. You know, hopefully we've all had great teachers, which I definitely have. And I've also had the teachers who were a little burned out, a little checked out. And I knew that, you know, I always wanted to be the teacher who just gave everything, like, you know, left it all on the field, you know, and I would sometimes go home and barely even be able to move for a couple of hours because I would just have to use all my energy, you know, during the day with my students. And I was just that kind of teacher. And I just gave everything, every ounce that I had into, you know, the classes and just like interacting with students and supporting them after hours and whatever. So I realized it was really starting to take a lot out of me. And I didn't want to be the checked out teacher. And I recognized in myself, I was just like, I don't have it in me right now to continue to be the kind of teacher that I can be, that I should be, that these kids need and deserve, and that I really want to be. And if I'm really going to, if I'm not really capable of being all in, I need to take a break from this. So that's what spurred that transition. And, you know, I happened to have this opportunity at the Times. So it just sort of all came together for me. Because I'm sure if it didn't, it would have been a bigger crisis. I can imagine. Yeah. It really would have been hard.
Yeah.
So I had this opportunity. And I remember when I went in to give notice, I was like, truthfully, I wasn't looking for another job. You know, when this opportunity presented itself, it was sort of like, okay, good. I can go leave teaching for a little while. Maybe I'll go back. Maybe it'll be a brief respite. Who knows? But, you know, I need to do something else and recharge my batteries and do something different and not be doing something where I was giving in the same way. Teaching can be so draining. So that was one. And then yeah, leaving the Times also. So it was just like, I had this idea that just was like, you know, as Morpheus says in the Matrix, you know, like a splinter in my mind. It was just like, it just kept kind of eating at me. I had this idea for something that I thought should exist and didn't exist that I thought, you know, I, you know, maybe could bring into the world. And it just became like, I just couldn't ignore it. I just got really excited about it. I thought it had a lot of potential. And, you know, I just thought, okay, I sometimes in life you have to take a risk. And you know, I had a lot of support from my spouse and the ability to do it. So that was just like this pressing idea that I just got more and more excited about and just like kept me up at night. It wouldn't leave me alone. And so that was like a totally different reason, you know, to transition. So yeah, I've been through different transitions for completely different reasons. Yeah.
Well, I think a commonality between them is that you listened to yourself, you know, what was going on. And what in one was that like, I can't keep doing this forever. And the other is there's something else that's speaking to me that wants to be expressed.
That's right.
I think that's a fantastic way to answer that question. I love it.
No, I think that's right. And I think, you know, one of the conversations in my accountability group and Evolve Me is about listening to yourself and like trusting yourself and trusting your gut. You know, we've all bounced ideas around like, oh, you know, trying this on for size, like, does this feel right? Or like, I'm interviewing for this position like, that we've all been sharing with each other. And, you know, at some points we've all reminded each other, no, you really need to listen to yourself. That is really important. And sometimes even that is hard or it feels hard.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
It is, yeah. I mean, it is, that, it is, even that is like, it sounds really easy, but sometimes it's hard.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Right?
I think, like, you know, different personalities, you know, I think self-care is not something that comes naturally to me, you know, and I think that goes along with it. Like listening to what you need and responding to it and finding ways to give yourself that is not easy. A lot of us have been trained or trained ourselves to kind of just grit your teeth and bear it and push through, but that's not always healthy.
That's exactly it. And so really listen to like the little voice or whatever it is, like until even learn how to even listen to it. That can be a process for people right there. Yeah. So I think it's one of those things that sounds to me like, oh, listen to yourself. It sounds like, you know, it's like a pretty little, like a thing you'd see on Instagram and like really pretty lettering. Yeah. And people are like liking it. And then you're like, what does that mean? Like, do I have an inner voice? You know, like I think for some people that is something you need to learn.
Yeah. I love that. Just as we move to wrapping up here, just as people are listening and, you know, maybe they're in one of these stuck in between places. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if you have any words of encouragement or camaraderie or hope or anything that you'd just want to offer to people who are in those kind of hard to stay in places.
Yeah. Well, a lot of camaraderie for starters. As I said before, I've definitely had my moments of stuckness and feeling frozen and feeling, you know, like, let's be honest, I've had moments where I feel pretty low about it. Like, oh, I'm never going to work again. I've had moments where I've thought, am I ever going to get unstuck? Like, I'm so frozen. I'm like fully frozen. Like, this is the tundra. This is the ice cap. I'm not, I don't know how to thaw, you know, this out. Or I don't know how to listen to my inner voice. Like, what is it telling me? I'm not sure. Mm. Or just lack of clarity, lack of direction. I have felt useless. I have felt like I'm wasting my life. You know, I feel like, what did my career add up to? Nothing. I mean, I've felt all of these, all the negative thoughts you could think. Yeah. I've thought them. So camaraderie, definitely. I mean, if you're feeling any piece of that, people out there listening, like, you're not alone. You're not the only person thinking about your career this way. You're like far from it. There are lots of people, even people who, like, you know, you may look at their LinkedIn or just on paper, they look successful or they look like they're happy in their jobs. Often I've had lots of conversations with people, especially over the past year, and people who have been, you know, in their jobs for a long time have confided, I've never felt fully happy in this job. I don't even know why I stayed this long. I should be doing something totally different. I wasted all these years, you know, and they feel stuck, like, because they can't leave because for whatever reason, you know, they're dependent on that job for whatever reason, and they feel stuck and they feel like they're wasting their lives. So it's not only like only if you're between careers or something like that, that you feel these feelings. People feel these feelings at all kinds of different, you know, junctures and for different reasons. Yep. So I would say that if you do feel this way, this is something I also really do want to normalize, not just the not having a nonlinear career path, but normalizing feeling stuck about your career, normalizing giving voice to that, normalizing wanting to explore a little bit, normalizing being unsure of where to go and needing some guidance. I feel like that we need to make that not shameful and not embarrassing and not silent.
I love it.
So I think that's really important. So definitely a lot of camaraderie. Yeah. I mean, words of hope and encouragement. I do think these kinds of conversations are really helpful. So I think if you have people that you feel, you know, to start with just like friendlies, you know, people you feel like you can trust that you can open up to and share, you know, your doubts or your stuckness or, you know, your paralysis or, you know, your doubt, your questions, you know, having conversations with people, whether they're people in your personal life or your professional life, that can be really helpful. Mm. You know, one thing I recently did, I asked former colleagues if they would share a word with me about something that they think I'm good at or best at and something they think I should work on, which is exposing, right? That's an awkward question to ask. And it was hard for me to even ask it, but it was so worthwhile. That's something that's been helping me think about my career and what I want to do. You know, when you think about things like, what am I best at or where have I added value or where have I had impact, to get that kind of feedback has been really helpful. So, you know, people are giving it voluntarily. You know, I asked a whole bunch of people, if you want, if you can, you know, I'd be grateful. If not, you know, and I said I would take it in the spirit of generosity. And people have said very kind things that have taken me by surprise. Very cool. People have given feedback that make me feel seen. And nothing that I've been shocked by. Like, I can't believe that person thinks I'm not good at this particular thing. It's like, oh yeah, they're right. Like, I was struggling with this thing. Or I am struggling with this thing. And they're right about that. So that can really help you feel seen and understood. And it can also be very validating. Like, okay, this is something I struggle with. And that's good to know that, like, other people realize that. Maybe, you know, I need to, you know, get help with that in a certain way, whatever the thing is. So I feel like that can be really helpful. So yeah, I definitely think conversations are really helpful. If people are open to reading the kinds of books that we've been talking about, like Range and Impact, or lots of books. There's another one that people recommended, that Twitter thread called The Squiggly Career, about nonlinear pathing.
I need to check that one out. Like,
yeah. I know, me too. I need to do that too. And then, you know, even like programs like the one I'm in, there's other websites and there's other programs. If you want something that's a little more structured, if you're a person who, you know, benefits from structure, then, you know, go find something that has structure. You know, I think there is hope. I think there's stuff out there for people, you know, like us. But I do think that it can be enormously comforting to know you're definitely not alone. It's not just you. It's not some weird thing about you. This is just, it's a very typical thing in life, and just finding your way out can be hard, but it's very possible.
Yep. You're in good company. Yeah. I think that
very much so.
Those are just great, great words of just knowing that other people are in it.
Yeah.
It's just so, so important. So important.
Yeah, it is important. I mean, people can reach out to me. Like, I'm very findable. I have had people reach out to me for guidance and help of different sorts, just, you know, just words of these kinds of words, just having this kind of conversation. Yeah. You know, I've advised people on their resumes or their cover letters or their interviews, like how to frame this kind of stuff. I mean, I'm always happy to be reached out to. And I know there's lots of other people out there too, who are having these kinds of conversations. Yep. So just finding your way in to people who want to have these conversations can be really, really helpful.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for that. And for people who are just resonating with you and want to connect with you or follow along with your work, is there anything specific you'd like to invite them to?
Oh, well, I'm findable on Twitter. Like you said, that one tweet, which I'll never cease to amaze me. You know, my DMs are open. So if people want to reach out to me, I'm very open to that. So my Twitter handle for people who are on Twitter is HEOJ. That's another story for another day. You know, I'm findable. You know, people can connect with me on LinkedIn. Those are probably really easy ways to find me. There's no one else on the planet with my name. So I have a unique name. So looking for Holly O'Jalva is very easy. So yeah, I'm very open to reach out if people want to have a chat.
Awesome.
But yeah, I mean, even just listening to this podcast, I mean, your podcast is a gift to people who are in this space.
Oh, thank you. I hope so. That's my intent. So thank you for that.
I've no doubt.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Holly, so much for just your openness and vulnerability and wisdom and everything. It's just been so fun to connect. Really appreciate your time with us today.
The pleasure's been for me. This has been really, I feel like this was almost like a therapy session. So thank you. Thank you, Dan.
a little career therapy. Yeah.
Yes. This is great. It's to the point, you know, of how useful it is to have these conversations. It really is. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Holly, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You can find links to all of Holly's work in our show notes at themeaningmovement.com/Holly. While you're there, take a quick moment to opt in to the newsletter on one of the opt-in boxes you'll see around the site. It's the way to get the best of what the Meaning Movement has to offer for free in your inbox. Two quick things that are super important. If you have enjoyed this episode or any episode of the podcast, I want to ask you to please leave a rating and review wherever you get this podcast. It means the world to me to know that this matters to you. So please take a moment to do so. That's how people like you find the show. And I will be forever, forever grateful. I know I ask all the time, but it is that important. Also, if you would like to be a guest on this show, we'd love to hear from you. Go to themeaningmovement.com/apply to apply. I'd love to hear from you. Our music is by Tom Roram. Our artwork is by Eliezer Ruiz. I'll be back with you in a couple weeks. Take care. Until then.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.